Well, hello, my friends. This is Mark Gladman, also known as Brother Frederick James, your friendly neighborhood monk in Docs. And this is episode 1 of the Monk on the Mic podcast. What on earth are you doing? And oh my goodness, I just can't believe that I finally into doing episode 1 of this podcast. This podcast has been a long time coming. It's certainly not the only broadcasting I've ever been involved in, but in terms of idea and concept to finally getting something out there, this has been a long time coming for lots of reasons. But I really hope you enjoy what we do with Monk on the Mic and where we're going to go over the next little while. Some of it'll be me, some of it'll be interviews with people, there'll be teaching, there'll be conversation, all sorts of stuff that'll be happening over the next little while. And I really hope that this will help you in some way, shape, or form as you continue to explore your spirituality, particularly if you're coming from a Christian angle, or if you're exploring a Christian angle but are looking for something a little bit different than perhaps what you've experienced in the past. A couple of things before we jump into what we're going to be talking about today. First of all, thank you so much for your patience as I develop the Table app. As many of you are aware, as this podcast goes to air, as I sit here speaking to you today, I am still COVID positive. It has been just over a week now, and I am getting really, really tired of being tired and sick. But we're getting there, but obviously, this has put some delays in place. Just due to the ability of being able to sit there and make the stuff, and along with some other things that have been going on as well. So, thank you for your patience, but I am hoping that somewhere in the Christmas New Year period, we will be launching and you'll be able to access the app and have a good look at it there. And I'm really hoping it will be a blessing to you. Second thing, before we jump into today, because some of these things will come up in the stuff that we're talking about today. If you're unfamiliar with my work and who I am and so on, then it's worth going to Instagram and checking out my profile there at monkindocs and having a good look at who I am and what I'm about. In particular, if you were to go to the link tree that's in my bio there, or just go to linktr.ee/monkindocs, you'll see a link that'll take you to a particular Instagram post that talks about my Benedictine community. Now, this is important because my particular Benedictine community is a little bit unique in the way that you would think traditional, normal monastic life happens. In our particular Benedictine order, which, by the way, is a bona fide Benedictine community that's in the Benedictine style of monastic life. We have vowed people, we have people who are called conversi, we have people who are oblates. But what's interesting about our community is that we live in our own homes, in our own places, in various places across the world, predominantly at the moment in the United States, in just outside in the Americas, in the UK, and me in Australia. We carry on our vocation where we are through the work that we do and through the communities that we live in. And the one that gets most people is that even our professed, vowed members of our community, fully professed monks, who are male and female, by the way, it's just that the females prefer to be called monks than nuns, we can be married. Now, this is the one that trips up most people. So, if you were to go to that particular post in the link tree, I think the link says something along the lines of, wait, you're a monk and you're married too. And if you click on that, there is a brief description in the caption there of who our community is and what we are about. But it's important that you understand that, yes, I am a fully professed, simply professed at this point. My abbot tells me that in the next little while, perhaps I'll be invited to make my solemn vows. So this is something that I've been a part of now for, gee, since 2016. I was made a postulant in the community. So that's what, 7, 9, 9, 10, 11, 12, like, 6, 7 years now that I've been hanging around the community. I've been a postulant, I've been a novice, I've been simply professed, but I'm a fully vowed monk. But I am also married, and I don't live at the mother house, which is in the United States. We are connected to the Episcopal Church, which in Australia is the Anglican Church, and in the UK is the Anglican Church, or C of E, to differentiate that from the Anglican Church in the United States, which is different to the Episcopal Church. So goes so goes Christianity, I guess, in many places for many different reasons. That's not a judgment call. It's just the state of play where it is at the moment. But please understand that I am a fully blown Benedictine monk, vowed, and I do happen to be married, and I do happen to not live at the mother house, which is in the United States. So you can find that link and have a look. And if you've got questions, please send me an email, monkindocs@gmail.com, or send me a direct message on Instagram. I'd be very happy to answer your questions there. Right, so with those things as the little prelude, let's get started on where I wanted to go today. And I literally do want to talk to you about what on earth are you doing. Now, one of my favorite stories in the scripture comes out of Mark's gospel at the very, very beginning. And it's Mark chapter 1, and it starts at verse 35. And this is what Mark writes: "Very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, and went off to a solitary place where he prayed. Simon and his companions went to look for him, and when they found him, they exclaimed, 'Everyone's looking for you.' Jesus replied," and I love this, "Jesus replied, 'Well, let's go somewhere else, to the nearby villages, so I can preach there also. That is why I have come.'" Now, this is one of my favorite verses for a lot of reasons. I love that Jesus gets up early. I love to get up early. I love that he gets up early and he goes off somewhere on his own to pray. I love doing the same thing. I love that when the disciples come and look for him, they say, "Everyone's looking for you." And Jesus says, "Let's go somewhere else." But it's that question that they ask him when they say, "Hey, everyone's looking for you." That's what I want to hone in on today, because essentially what that verse is asking is, what on earth are you doing? Now, this particular little part of Mark comes immediately after an incredibly busy day in the life of Jesus. He calls the disciples, and then they went to Capernaum, and there he does teaching, and he's praying for people, and he's healing people at the synagogue. And then they go back to Simon's mother-in-law's place, and they heal her, and then a whole bunch of other people. After sunset, everyone's coming in and bringing people for Jesus to pray for them and to teach them, and he's listening to them and so on, or they're listening to him and so on. So it's an incredibly busy, busy, busy day of ministry. And the next morning, Jesus takes himself off by himself to pray, which A, is a very sensible thing to do. But B, when the disciples find him, they literally say to him, "Hey man, everyone's looking for you." In other words, what on earth are you doing? Why are you here? Why are you out here in the middle of nowhere praying? Why aren't you back here teaching people, praying for people, ministering to people, supporting people? That's what you were doing yesterday. Why aren't you doing it today? What are you doing here? What on earth are you doing? Now, just keep that story in the back of your mind for a moment. Now, right now, all the things that are happening for me are the cause and culmination of a 5-year plan that's happened 4.5 years too early. So here's the story. My wife and I decided that we might want to pursue a bit of a tree change. We lived on the Gold Coast, on Australia's Gold Coast, right at Burleigh Beach, and we had a great lifestyle there, but it was starting for us to get very noisy and all sorts of other stuff. And we thought it might be nice that within 5 years that we transition to a lifestyle out in the country. So we began to look at what that might look like and inquire about how we might go about those things. And as it turned out, it seemed like an opportune time to jump in sooner rather than later for lots of different reasons. Long story short, we found a house, we made an offer, the offer was accepted, we put our apartment on the Gold Coast on the market. Just in time before the markets in Australia started to decline somewhat, we got an offer that was fantastic. We accepted that. And within 6 months of thinking in 5 years, we will relocate out to the country, we were literally living in a house in the country. Now, that move happened in the middle of the year, and that's the middle of the school year in Australia. And I was a chaplain in a school, a Christian school there on the Gold Coast. And so I decided that I would finish the year off so I could, do graduation with the year 12 students and see the students through to the end of the year, give the school plenty of time to find my replacement and so on. And so for the last 6 months, I have been living on the Gold Coast, which is about 2.5 hours from here, living on the Gold Coast through the week, and then on weekends coming home to my wife and dogs and house and living out here. And that's been going on now for 6 months, but it literally all finished 1 week ago, today as I record this, or yesterday as I record this. And so this we did this thing, and it was all happening, and I let my employer know that in 6 months I was going to be finishing up and so on and so forth, which is all great. And so then we began to tell people what was happening, that we were relocating. And there were some who, while they were reacting to different things, they were implicitly almost all asking the same question. And that question was, what on earth are you doing? So for some people were like, wait a minute, so you're leaving here, the Gold Coast, to go there in outback country nowhere? Why? What on earth are you doing? Now, just to give you a bit of a picture, for those of you who are surfers, no matter where you live in the world, the minute I said I lived at Burleigh Beach, at Burleigh Heads, you went, oh wow, because that is literally one of the surfing circuit beaches, worldwide surfing circuit beaches, where they have major international competitions right there. It's some of the most beautiful beaches in Australia, let alone possibly even the world, are on the Gold Coast. Where I lived, I was literally walking distance to cafes, restaurants, distilleries, breweries, bakeries, boutique bakeries, all these beautiful spots that people would travel miles to get to and have holidays to go to. And they were all literally, I could literally park my car on my motorcycle at the start of the holidays, and not touch my car or motorcycle again for the rest of the holiday break, no matter how long that holiday break was. I could either walk everywhere, or if I needed to go somewhere further, public transport was right on my doorstep. It was such a beautiful spot. The beach was literally, I walk across the road and I'm walking on them at one of the most pristine beaches in the world. I would go for morning runs there. Beautiful, beautiful place. And people were kind of like, what are you doing? You're giving all this up to go to a little town in country Queensland? What on earth are you doing? And then some people were a little bit surprised because we sold up on the Gold Coast. But then what we did was, unlike what most people would expect you to do, and that is to take the equity in the sale that you made and put it into a bigger mortgage and buy something bigger or flashier or whatever, we went the opposite direction. We literally downsized. Now, because we were an apartment, we got a place that was bigger, obviously, and with more land that we could do things in, like plant our vegetables and let our dogs run and enjoy nature more. But our mortgage went down. We downsized the mortgage and everything went smaller. And people were like, "What on earth are you doing? This is backwards. You're not supposed to do it this way. You're supposed to invest in something bigger so you can make more equity, so you can invest in something bigger and make more equity. You're literally going backwards. This is not a good idea." They were saying, "What on earth are you doing?" And then there were some people who, when I told them what we were doing, said to me, "So you have a job lined up? Where are you working? Are you moving because of work?" And I was like, "No, I'm actually not. I love my job where I was. I was enjoying it. I'd done some great things in it. I'd been there for 7 and a bit years, and yet it just felt right to say things are all on a high. It's time to finish. Let's move." And because of the way we moved and the work that my wife does, there was no urgency, or even necessity, perhaps, for me to race out and find another job. And for some people, though, this was a case of, "No, wait, what? What on earth are you doing?" I'm only 50, and so for a lot of people, the idea that I wouldn't go straight into another job or something like that, they just couldn't understand it. And so this question, "What on earth are you doing?" kept coming up again and again and again and again. And then when I realized that it was an opportunity for me to create what is becoming the Table app, what is becoming more content out of what I've been doing with Monk and Docs on Instagram for the last nearly 3 years. A bit more than that, for if you include the Modern Monk project, that was the first iteration of Monk and Docs. And I realized this is the work I can put my hands to. People were still like, "So will you get paid for this?" And I'm like, "Maybe." Some of the things I'm going to be able to, I guess, put on the market. But there's still a lot of things I want to be able to give people for free simply because I want to bless them. And I'm sure that in some way we'll find some way to compensate and pay for what it costs to create and put it out there and house it on the internet and stuff like that. And I guess to compensate for the time and the energy that's gone into doing this, I'm sure that will all work out. And people still couldn't get their heads around that. What on earth are you doing? Are you crazy? And what's interesting is that if the more you contemplate that question, "What on earth are you doing?" it begins to take on a slightly different form. It becomes more, "On this earth, what are you doing?" Slight shift there, but can you see what I've done? What on earth are you doing? You think about it enough, it becomes, "On this earth, what are you doing?" Now, I just want to make it clear. In our case, there was forethought and planning, albeit it was relatively quick planning. But at its core, when we thought about it some more, our decision to move out here to country nowhere, which is beautiful, by the way. I'm so blessed that we've been able to find a space out here. But at its core, our decisions to do this were basically founded on that question, even though we didn't know it at the time. On this earth, what are you doing? And so, when we contemplated this, and when I contemplated this for myself, and I share this question with you today because I'm wondering, what on earth are you doing? And have you ever asked yourself that question, what on earth are you doing? There are three things that came up as I contemplate this in terms of what we have done and in terms of what I have done and what I am walking into doing and being as I shift into life out here. The first one was this, that in terms of what on earth are you doing, whatever it is, I really knew that Jesus said it should be as it is in heaven. We'll come back to that in a second. Just hold that thought for a moment. The second one was that in terms of what on earth am I doing? That whatever it is, it should be moving towards the right posture and participation with God. And then finally, in terms of what on earth I'm doing, whatever it is, It should give scope to live out the image of God through who I am, through where I am, and with what I have. So what on earth are you doing? Let's contemplate these three things, and as we do, I invite you to reflect on what it is that you are doing on earth right now. And not in terms of seeing them as something you have to move from. It's interesting. This is not an exercise in dropping something to move to something else necessarily. I could have answered all these three questions in the affirmative based on where I was and what I was doing. What I believe this is, it's about seeing the intrinsic value in who we are and what we're doing. There are so many people out there who are doing things that they think are second rate, that they think are lesser than others. I don't think there's any hierarchy in being who we are and doing what we do. What I think there is finding the intrinsic worth and value in those things. And that intrinsic worth and value doesn't necessarily come from the work itself or even the outcomes of the work. It comes from the image of God that's in you being expressed through that work, which then in turn expresses itself out of the results of that work, if that makes sense. So let's talk about these things today and have a quick think about what they might mean for you. We'll allow you to some time to scope to think about what they might mean for you. So whatever it is, first of all, Jesus said it should be as it is in heaven. What on earth are you doing? It should be whatever's done on earth is done as it is in heaven. Now in Matthew chapter 6 and verse 10, this is Jesus teaching the model prayer. And in verse 10, he teaches that line. Your kingdom come on earth as it is in heaven. Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And this is really interesting because if you've got the wrong idea of heaven, you'll get the wrong idea of what it is that this means. So Jesus, particularly in Matthew's gospel and also in Luke's gospel to an extent, but right across the four gospels, uses this term, the kingdom of God or the kingdom of heaven. They're interchangeable. What they don't mean and what they don't talk about is something that's coming later on when you die, you go to the kingdom of heaven. It's not a place per se. The kingdom of heaven is more like a way of doing and being. If you think about the kingdom of heaven as being like a culture, for better or worse, and I'll let you make your own decision about that, although personally I think in many places it's been for the worse, when the British Empire expanded across the world, it took with it what it meant to be British. So you could go to places like Australia, like New Zealand, like Canada, like parts of Southeast Asia and parts of Africa, and you would find people there eating English food, speaking English, embracing British ways of doing parliament, embracing British laws, embracing British ways of policing and all this other stuff. And so it wasn't so much that the place was the kingdom of Britain or Great Britain per se. It was that what made it the kingdom of Great Britain was the things that were being enforced in some places, in many places, and entrenched in those things. So if you think of the kingdom of heaven in a similar way, it's not about taking over things, by the way. It's about simply living those things out. The kingdom of Great Britain could easily have brought its languages and foods and culture and everything else and shared that with the indigenous people without doing it the way that it did, without forcing it on it. And this is probably a really good point because in bringing God's kingdom on earth as it is in heaven, there are a number of people out there who think that this should be done by enforcing some sort of Christian ideation, Christian nation, Christian philosophy on everything. That it needs to be, everyone needs to be forced into this Christian. And I don't think that that's the way it is at all. And I don't think that that's what Jesus was even wanting us to do. But what this kingdom of heaven is, it's about a particular way of doing and a particular way of being, and that we do and be those things in the world. And as we do those things on earth, we are literally bringing the heavens, this way of kingdom way of doing and being, to earth. we are literally participating with God, and we'll get to that in the next point, but we're literally participating with God in bringing about a world that God desires. And what does that world look like? You'd be excused for thinking that the world that God desires is one where everyone does the right things and nobody's this and everybody's that and everybody wears these types of clothing and is this type of sexuality and is list the things that so many people within Christianity have tried to enforce on others down through the centuries and even in the modern times. That's not what it's about. It's literally about simply being and doing as God has called us to be. And how has God called us to be? To love God and to love our neighbour as ourselves. And through loving our neighbour as ourselves, that is how we love God. We become people who can identify the image of God in others and see it in ourselves and start to live out that nature of who we are, which is to love with all our heart, with all our soul, with all our mind, with all our strength, both God and our neighbour. And we love our neighbour because they are an extension of who we are, and we start to see this image of God that's in us, it's also in others, and we share love with one another. This is literally what Jesus' ministry was all about. It was about, wake up, God is here, this kingdom of heaven is here, it is within you, it is among you, it is at hand. Wake up and start to live into it. And as you do, you literally will see this heaven that you're pining for somewhere else. It is here, it is now, and it can be lived in and lived out as you are. And so whatever it is on earth that you're doing is going to be a taking part, a participation in bringing this kingdom of heaven to earth and allowing others to come into contact with this God and this kingdom through you. The image of God that you're made in, God lives through you by God's Spirit. And as you love others, that image of God is literally manifest. It becomes incarnate. You are incarnation. That's literally what Jesus came to show us, that we can each live an incarnation of the image of God in the lives of others if we go about doing things in a way that brings heaven to earth. So what on earth are you doing? Well, whatever it is going to be bringing heaven to earth somewhere, to someone. All right. The second thing was, whatever it is, it should be moving towards the right posture and participation. The technical word for this is the word orthopraxy. And this word orthopraxy, the word ortho, means to be straight or correct. And then praxis means to practice. Orthodoxy, which is another term that you've probably heard of a bit more often. Ortho, straight or correct. Doxy, as in knowledge or blessing. So what we're talking about here is doing work that moves you towards the right posture and right participation in the world, which is your right practice. Now, to understand what I mean by this, you might consider the whole of the Epistle of James. Now, James is probably one of my favorite letters apart from 1 John. And James is interesting because James spends a lot of time talking about how to live well, how to live out this faith that we've taken on. James isn't interested in making sure that everyone believes the right things about God or Jesus or anything else. James has a very, very intent interest in ensuring that if you are going to be someone who says that you believe in God or that you follow this Jesus or follow God, then you are going to be living in a particular way which is going to simply come as you allow yourself to be embraced by this image of God that you've got there. That's literally a part of you. And so we read things in James, like in verse 26 and 27 of chapter 1. If anyone considers themselves religious and does not keep a tight rein on their tongue, they deceive themselves and their religion is worthless. Religion that God accepts as pure and faultless is this: look after orphans and widows in their distress and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world. By the way, that does not talk about if you look into the Greek, that's talking about not taking up the world's ways of doing things. It's not talking about hiding yourself away or anything like that. Chapter 2 has probably got that most famous part there where James talks about faith and works, and how that if our faith is going to be anything, then it'll be proven by our works, and that faith without works is dead faith. You must have those two things go together. And so there's this participation and practice in who we are in the people of God. In the very first story we read, or the second story we read rather, of the creation account, God makes these people, and then God places these people in a garden, and God says to these people, now I want you to participate with me and work with me in keeping this creation beautiful. Keep it and till it. In other words, work the land, work the planet, and look after it, tend it, and then also protect it. So there's this dual mandate, if you like, that we have in our lives. As we go about what we do in the world, we are participating with God in bringing this place alive with God's presence, with God's hope, with God's love. There's a great book which is called God is the Good We Do, and it's written by a self-professed agnostic Jew called Michael Benedict. He's an architect of great renown, but this particular book isn't about architecture. It's about a philosophy of religion. No, not even religion, except I guess in the terms of what James just said, where in Benedict's philosophy, God literally becomes manifest in and as part of the good that human beings do for one another. And what's beautiful about this philosophy is he says in the book, I don't want to start a new religion here. I don't want to start a new philosophy or ism. What I would love to be able to do is to have people see that this is literally a way of doing and being that brings about who God is and what God's about to the place where we are. That we literally can have Jewish, he calls this theopraxy, by the way, God in the practice, God in the action. So he talks about how I'd love to have theopracticing Jews, Christians, Muslims, what have you. That people who believe that through the work that we do with and for each other, God is there in the midst of that practice. God is there in it. And so when you're thinking about what on earth am I doing, I encourage you to think about that in terms of your participation in the world as being something that you're doing with God, and your posture as being a posture that Jesus themselves would take, where Jesus talks about being a servant to all, that those who lead are going to be servants, and seeing ourselves in that same sense and regard. So that's the second thing. So the third one, in terms of this question of what on earth are you doing, that whatever it is should give the scope to live out the image of God through who you are, where you are, and with what you have. Now, just a couple of weeks ago in the lectionary readings for Sunday, by the way, I have another podcast that I do with a friend of mine. It's called Between Two Sundays, and my friend, whose name is also Mark, and I sit down and we contemplate the readings that we've just lived out of from the Sunday before, and we contemplate into the readings for the Sunday to come. And we've been doing this for just over a year now. We started it a year ago in year C. Why not start backwards? And of course, now we're into year A. And it's a great, for us, we love doing it because Mark and I have known each other for 15 or so years. And we both have backgrounds in theology and ministry. And we've both done a lot of study and reflection and research and preaching about these things. And we sit there and we literally contemplate the scripture passages. We don't script anything. We sit down and we just have a conversation. And if you're interested, you can have a listen to that. And it comes out in the middle of each week, literally between the two Sundays, which is why it's called Between Two Sundays. But a couple of weeks ago, just towards the end of the year C year, so it would have been the 23rd Sunday after Pentecost, as I look at this list here, the readings were really interesting because the readings really spoke into what we do as we live ourselves out in the world. So the two that really stood out were from Isaiah 65, and then the gospel reading for that week was from Luke 21. In the Isaiah 65 reading, God speaking through Isaiah says, "I'm about to create a new heavens and a new earth. The former things shall not be remembered or come to mind." This is starting in verse 17, by the way, if you want to have a look at it later. Isaiah goes on, "But be glad and rejoice forever in what I am creating, for I'm about to create Jerusalem as a joy and its people as a delight." And then there's a little bit about what this place is going to be like, which, by the way, if you read it through what we just talked about, the kingdom of God coming on earth as it is in heaven, it will make a lot of sense. But then in verse 21, the words that have come through Isaiah go like this: "They shall build houses and inhabit them, and they shall plant vineyards and eat their fruit." And if you read on from there, what you start to see is that there is this call on the people of Israel, that as God is going to go about creating this new heavens and new earth, there is a task for them to do in participating with it. And that is literally to build houses and to live in them and to plant vineyards and harvest from them and eat their fruit. What you've literally got here is a description of, quote unquote, living normally in this world as God creates this new heaven and new earth. And we participate literally by living out our lives right there and then as everything is happening and going on. Then, if you were to have a look at the gospel reading for that week, which is Luke 21, verses 5 to 19, this is that interesting passage where Jesus gets asked a temple about about the temple. And Jesus has just said that the temple will be pulled apart. Not one stone will be left upon another. All will be thrown down. And the question comes from those who are with him: when will this be, and what will be the sign that this is about to take place? And then Jesus goes on to talk about, you'll hear of wars and insurrections. Don't be terrified. Nation will rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom, earthquakes, plagues, all sorts of stuff that'll happen. Before all this occurs, you'll be arrested and so forth and so on. But right at the very end of this, you have this comment that not a hair on your head will perish, and by your endurance you will gain your souls. Now, you'll have to go back and have a listen to this episode if you really want to get the nuance and in depth. I don't want to go into too much depth here, but suffice to say, the very first part of this up to when Jesus gets asked this question is kind of like one end of a bookend. And that comment at the end about by your endurance you will gain your souls is kind of like a second bookend at the other end. And what you literally see here when you start to read it and contemplate it is that by living out your life amongst all the stuff that's going to go down in this world that we live in, all these things, the calamities and plagues and earthquakes and everything else, we can't escape this. This is a part of what it means to live in a world that's kind of broken and crappy and and the things that some people choose to do to it in order to raise themselves to power and prestige and everything else, and to hurt others, and then teaching that to others so that it gets continued and picked up. But through your endurance, you will gain your souls. That word soul, by the way, in the Greek, is psuche, which literally means the vital breath or the breath of life. In Hebrew, the word for soul is phago, which means the direct aftermath of God breathing life into a person. All right? And so Jesus finishes by saying, by your endurance, by living out your life amongst all this stuff that's going to go on, you will find your wholeness. You will find life. You will find the breath of life. In other words, through enduring this world and going out and living in it and being a part of it and bringing the kingdom of God in it, that's literally how you find your salvation. By the word, the way the word that's used in the New Testament for salvation is a word that means to be made whole. It's not about getting saved from yourself, it's about being made whole and that wholeness coming about for you. In other words, what Jesus is talking about here in Luke 21 is, I'm participating in this life because this is what I am created for. And as I go about living this life, I am literally allowing this breath of life to be breathed through me. In other words, that is the image of God working through you. And it's the image of God working through you wherever you are, through who you are, with what you have. It's that word to Isaiah. What do we do while God, you're creating this new heavens and new earth? Go build your houses. Be with your families. Work with your neighbors. Go plant your crops and then harvest them and eat them and share them with each other and live life. And as you do this, the very breath of God, that animating life force that God breathed in those first humans in that story back in Genesis 2, that life force that God breathed through us will work through you. And this literally is what on earth you are doing. You're being who you are, or when you start to discover who you are and you can be who you are. And when you know that you can be who you are wherever you are, that the very place that God has you now is the place where God can start working and moving through you. And doing that simply with what you have. You don't have to have a lot of stuff. You don't have, if you don't have particular tools and stuff, well, the question is, well, what do I have that I can do this now, that I can do something now? So what on earth are you doing, my friend? What on earth are you doing? Well, my answer to that is, in this whole change of life that I've had in the last 6 months that I'm only just fully encompassing now and fully embracing now, because it's only for 1 week I've been here full time, and I'm starting to find where I sit with my work online, teaching, spiritual direction, creating things that will help people grow in who they are in God and be blessed, but as they discover more about who they are in God. What on earth am I doing? Well, my answer to all my friends who asked me that when I left the Gold Coast is, I'm exactly doing what I need to be doing. But my question to you, my friends, is, how about you? What on earth are you doing? Is what you are doing as it is in heaven? Is what you are doing moving you closer to the right posture and participation with God? Is what you're doing giving you the scope to live out God's image through who you are, where you are, and with what you have? Because that, my friend, is exactly what life is about. You don't have to pack up everything and move to the country and do something crazy like that. The question is, where you are now, can you see it? Can you see how God is and wants to more so move and operate through you where you are to bring heaven to earth with the people around you and for those people and in that community, in that neighborhood where you are? That's what on earth you're doing, whether you recognize it or not. Oh boy, there's a lot of stuff here to contemplate, I know. And I just hope that you start to see how God is using you on earth, right here, right now. So may the question, what on earth are you doing, lead you to that end. And whenever anybody asks you the question, hey, what on earth are you doing? May that be the trigger to remember that you are valuable because you are participating actively in what God is doing on earth right here, right now. And with that, we bring our first episode of Monk on the Mic to a close. Thank you for listening. May God bless you, and may grace, peace, and love go with you. Every day, this day, and always. Amen. Peace be with you, friends. Thanks for listening. We'll see you in episode 2 of Monk on the Mic. Bye for now.